This is The State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao, in for Frank Stachow. This week, President Trump issued a ban on transgender individuals serving in the military. That announcement came on Twitter, and it left high-ranking military officials wondering what policy change or ban the president is referring to. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff issued a letter after the tweets emerged. It said the policy on who's allowed to serve will not change until the White House sends the Defense Department new rules. Regardless of whether a policy is in the works or not, these tweets have prompted a conversation and sparked concern from trans members of the military. Joining me now to put this announcement in context is Shannon Gill-Reith. He's a professor of law and a professor of gender and sexuality studies at Wake Forest University in Winston-Salem. Shannon, welcome to the program.
Happy to be with you.
So first, let's get a sense of the current status of transgender individuals in the military. We know President Obama's administration announced last year trans people can serve openly, and there was this period of study that opened to develop guidelines and other protocols. Can you remind us how that process evolved? Where were we before this tweet?
Well, before the tweet, as you say, President Obama's defense secretary had lifted the ban on, which was decades old, on transgender people serving in the military in June of 2016. But the problem was there was some loophole in this that allowed the Pentagon in May of 2017 to deny the commissions of several cadets who were transgender. In other words, who were not already serving in the military but wanted to join. And so there was a bit of limbo with regard to the policy, but certainly the ban on those serving was counted as a victory by trans advocates.
So trans individuals who were in the military could openly serve. The Pentagon said they'd cover the medical costs of those who wanted to undergo transition.
And but that would not be a reason to discharge them or separate them from service, exactly.
Okay, but we were still sort of TBD on the policy for new recruits. So many right. politicians and military officials seem taken aback by the sudden announcement from President Trump. How are these decisions usually made?
Well, I mean, that is the big question, isn't it? Why does the president think that U.S. policy is written through tweets? And I think that is sort of the shock that we're seeing, from lots of Republicans, it has to be said. I think comes as much from that as from anything else. I mean, to me, the most interesting aspect of this has been the fact that Republicans like Orrin Hatch and John McCain have both come out and said, you know, we don't feel we should be discriminating, and this is not the way we should be conducting our affairs. I think that's really sort of a substantial departure from maybe what those responses would have looked like a few years ago. So that's interesting.
Also, in the past, these decisions have been slow and measured. There have been periods of review, long periods of consideration. Is that right?
That's right. Certainly with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I mean, you know, there was a period of 3 or 4 years of trying to consider all the potential loopholes and problems that might arise from the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. The lifting of the transgender ban actually came about, it seemed, much more quickly. But this tweet from President Trump just sort of dropped out of the blue, and there are all sorts of conjectures about why strategically he would decide to make this announcement at this particular time. But I think it was a surprise to most everybody who's been following this.
So legally, how easy would it be to rescind the right for trans people to serve right now?
Well, I think it would be quite easy, really. I mean, the White House would just have to send the Defense Department some guidelines for implementation. And this is the letter you referred to, I think, is saying as much. I mean, we aren't going to change a policy if we don't have rules by which we can change the policy. So the question now is, will the White House be forthcoming with those rules, or is this just one of those sort of late-night announcements that we've come used to, but from the president, and there'll be no real action following it? I think we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, at this point, it's unclear. The White House is kicking back to the Pentagon kicking back to the White House.
Right.
But so we've been talking about this group of transgender individuals. Estimates say there are about 2,400 active duty members who are trans. Can you tell us a bit about this population? What are their unique needs? Why are we considering them as such a distinct population?
Well, I mean, this is really an interesting question because, you know, one of the first things I thought of when I saw President Trump's tweet is, you know, to whom is he referring? What does he mean when he says trans? Because I think, you know, this is a sort of umbrella term applied to people in all various stages of some sort of disconnect from birth gender. And, you know, are we talking about people who are on hormone therapy? Are we talking about people who are actively working towards sex reassignment surgery, which is not always a course that trans people choose for themselves? Or are we talking about simply people who don't choose to identify with a gender binary and prefer to call themselves genderqueer or whatever other label they might want to give to themselves? So even there, right, I think we're not clear on, you know, to whom the president is referring when he says the policy is changing. What does trans mean within, you know, whatever guidelines he's imagining, if he is imagining them, and exactly to whom will this ban be effective? I think these are all open questions because, you know, what we have are a few characters in a tweet, and we don't really know what the content of that policy is going to look like.
So as you mentioned, trans is an umbrella term, but it does include some individuals who would want to undergo hormone therapy or gender reassignment.
Certainly.
Surgery, and these are sort of what is leading people to talk about this cost issue. President Trump described his concern that trans people serving openly would lead to, quote, tremendous medical costs. There was a report done for the Pentagon last year by the RAND Corporation saying trans people would cost the military an estimated 0.13% increase. So this is pretty tiny. What is your reading of this extra cost question?
Well, it's tiny in the context of the military's overall budget. I mean, we would be talking about millions of dollars probably at the end of the day, but that's, you know, so maybe to you or I that isn't tiny, but to the military's budget, that is a drop in the bucket. I think this is an interesting question for people, and I can understand how there are, you know, how people are trying to grapple with what's the best solution. I mean, one of the things that we had going for us when we repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and I worked on drafting the statute to do that, was that the American Psychological Association had dropped homosexuality as a mental disorder in 1973. Of course, gender dysphoria is still classified as a mental disorder, so there is ongoing medical treatment, and there is very much this question, especially among congressional Republicans, about whether the military should be taking on these costs. And I think that is still an open question. I will say that there are lots of physical and mental illnesses that prevent people from serving in the military. For example, although it's almost never talked about, and there was very little outrage about it at the time, there was a regulation in 2014 that banned HIV-positive people from serving in active duty roles. So because of the ongoing therapy needed to suppress HIV, et cetera. So in some ways, this is consistent with policies that already exist. And in some ways, you know, if you analogize this to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, for example, it's quite a departure.
So we've been talking a lot about this potential change. And some of the language used often is disruption, that it would entail a disruption to people serving to have a distraction of trans individuals. Can you talk about this language of disruption and maybe put it into some historical context for us?
Well, and as you say, that has always been the charge against doing anything progressive. I mean, when the military was desegregated on racial lines in 1948, there was certainly this conversation about how disruptive this would be to the morale of the fighting forces. Women in the eligibility of women to be in combat roles officially, although we know they've long been in combat roles since the American Revolution, in fact, that is a fairly recent development at the end of 2015. And of course, you know, again, there was a great deal of conversation about whether this would disrupt military readiness. And certainly with the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, shall we say, the sexual desegregation of the military. There was a great deal of concern about communal showers and that sort of thing. What we found, actually, at the time, was that there was much more acceptance of this idea of integration for gays and lesbians among the rank and file, among enlisted people, than among generals and higher-ups in the command. And when President Obama was considering removing the ban on transgender service, there was already a great deal of integration going on in most of the military by that point. The real holdout was the Marine Corps and at the time the Secretary of Defense overruled them. They requested actually to be exempted from the removal of the ban on transgender service, but they were not.
So there have been lots of changes in the past few decades and lots to keep looking for. Thank you so much for joining us to talk about this. That's Shannon Gilreath, a professor of law and gender and sexuality studies at Wake Forest University in Winston-Salem. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Just ahead, doctors reach out to undocumented immigrants afraid to seek health care. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.